The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. In Ukraine, Russia's illegal war continues to rage on at terrible cost. At the recent European Harm Reduction Conference in Warsaw, Poland, a panel entitled Harm Reduction in the War in Ukraine explored innovative strategies developed to address the complex challenges posed by the war. Let's hear from some of the speakers. Here's John Collins, Director of Academic Engagement at the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime.
To set some basic premises on this, the first thing is that we know that illicit drug use in Ukraine is having a significant impact within the army. We know that that organized crime is very much involved in supplying drugs to the front lines. So there is not shortages of drugs in many conditions under the front lines. We know this is also being replicated for Russian soldiers. So on the Russian front lines, we're seeing a lot of active drug use and we're seeing a lot of organized crime involvement in supplying it. We know that soldiers use drugs for a variety of reasons, simply just to escape, maybe to stay awake, to relax, to deal with PTSD, perhaps for as painkillers or anxiety, or else just basically to manage the existence on the front lines. Or they may have had pre-existing drug dependence issues when they actually got to the front lines. We know that there's a significant shortage of treatment services for veterans, and that they're at significant greater risk. And in our 2024 report, we made the point under the DDR heading that, you know, drug use is not just a public health issue that is for the main urban centres or for traditional audiences. This is something that you need to apply to soldiers. You need to be thinking about your harm reduction services. We know that goal four of the operational plan for the implementation of drug policy strategy in Ukraine is the expansion of harm reduction services. That's why it's very different from Russia. We know that there is a very different approach to, in principle, drug policy in Ukraine. But there is a long way to go. There is a real need to scale up a lot of these programs, and there are significant obstacles remain, as we know. Stigma, general shortages, resourcing issues, etc. So what were the immediate outcomes for Ukraine of the full-scale invasion? Well, the first thing was you had a disruption of the drug economy. So one of the main things we saw, and I'll come to this in a moment, was the disruption of the port of Odessa. That had significant supply disruptions within Ukrainian drug markets. The second is that we saw shifts in market dynamics, right? So we see the emergence of ATS and particularly salts becoming more prevalent in the Ukrainian context, and heroin being solidified as sort of what we would call a grade absentee. Now, I would be very interested to hear thoughts of people who have service provision expertise on the ground in Ukraine, what their thoughts are in the current situation with regards to heroin. And then, of course, the third point, which is around the impact, the social impact of the war on soldiers and the harms that that's going to cause. Okay, so as I said, what we have with cocaine, relatively stable demand. We saw initial disruption through the port of Odessa, but what happened, basically supply routes shifted west. So we now see cocaine coming overland through Europe. We see an uptick in seizures. We see prices more or less stable. So the cocaine market has not actually been significantly altered by the war. Heroin, as I said, it seems broadly absent. There is some indications, we're seeing some very light evidentiary indications that it's starting to emerge in the east of the country, but that is very much to be confirmed. Again, salts as a major rising issue, and alpha PVP, which is one that we've done particular work on as a key example of that. So you can see that with the case of cocaine, the shifting trends there where Odessa shuts down, and now through Hungary, Slovakia, Poland, etc., you see cocaine routes re-emerging. It shows the adaptability of these markets. Similarly, with COVID, when we thought drug markets were going to have a huge supply chain disruption, it actually proved to be pretty short-lived. The Ukraine conflict has been another example or case study in that. Heroin, as I said, I've seen a significant rise in illicit production of methadone. and clandestine laboratories being consistently dismantled. We also see alternative substitutes emerging. So buprenorphine, nalbuphine seems to be a particularly recent one on the black market, and actually also something that we're seeing on the front lines, that soldiers are sourcing it out. It's not officially prescribed, is my understanding, on the front lines as a battlefield medication, but it seems to be one that is being used quite a lot. Salts, again, I've mentioned this. We see a lot of precursors coming in from China, Poland, Turkey, and Egypt. And there appears to be a premium when we talk to organized crime actors or people in the illicit market in Ukraine. There seems to be a premium on it for people who have specific expertise, or cooks, effectively, who can manufacture these drugs. We see comparatively low prices, which suggests they're pretty well-developed markets with wholesale capacity. And that Telegram channels are being used for basically dead drops quite significantly. And this is something we're also seeing on the Russian, within Russian cities as well, this wholesale move towards dead drops, or this very significant move towards dead drops via Telegram. And our latest data from Odessa suggests that we're seeing significant amounts of salts also being taken to the front line through the postal service, and then effectively armed platoons meet these salts and act as distribution networks. So there is quite organized operations emerging, seemingly around distributing these kinds of drugs. Cannabis, I'm not going to speak much on, because I know people are quite familiar with the background of it, and there was also a panel just about it. So when we talk about treatment services for veterans, well, what we're seeing, of course, is increased drug use as self-medication. And so this is obviously going to have serious consequences in terms of blood-borne viruses, risk for fatal, non-fatal overdose. Now, what we know is that in the DDR discussion, we consistently speak as if there is a new cohort of people who use drugs going to emerge out of the conflict. But a lot of the people who served had pre-existing drug dependence issues. And we know now that opioid substitution therapy or drug dependence issues is not a disqualifier for serving in the army. But the problem is that you're not allowed to access OST while you're serving. And you can be dishonorably discharged, you can lose access to benefits, your family can lose the access to payments if you're killed in action, etc. So there is a very significant disconnect between army policy and what is needed around harm reduction services, and creating conditions where people in a destigmatized way can firstly operate on the front lines, and then when we do start looking at questions of demobilization, God willing, whenever that is, that we actually have a rational approach to what demobilization will look like. You know, one of our reports talks about voluntary screening, right, of a variety of things, STDs, bloodborne illnesses, indications for drug and alcohol abuse, right? These should not be stigmatized by catching people, but these should be screening what are going to be very traumatized and very problematic cases of people coming off the front lines and trying to reintegrate into normal life. I won't go into much more about these. I draw a lot from my colleague Tony Duffin's papers on this, around what sort of principles could we look at as we're designing harm reduction policies for post-war context. But co-production, I think, is a particularly important one. I think traditionally there was a sense of military families were different from the kind of families who would have to deal with drug treatment services in the past, right? The military is special. And these families would not associate or identify with the kind of services that many of them now are going to actually require. So I think there is a shift in this required. I think I'm running out of time. So, I have 1 minute. Yeah, so I'll just wrap up. So conclusions. One of the points I would like to make, and one of the things we're most interested on, and as part of the Ukraine Working Group we're working on, is this impact of security. And using security as a lens with which to advocate a drug policy reform framework. Right, that the changes in the links, so the immediate break, revolutionary is not the word, but a very significant break in links between Russian and Ukrainian organized crime is quite an opportunity. But also the shift of Ukraine well out of the kind of traditional Soviet style, I know it had already significantly moved beyond that, but the shift towards a more European style, European integration style drug policy represents a significant opportunity. And one of those is going to be around, how do you regulate black markets? Because a key security issue is that we talk a lot about geocriminality. Russia, for me, is the archetypal geocriminal state. It uses organized crime, it uses illicit markets to penetrate and undermine other countries and actors. And so this is, I think, a really important point that needs to be tied with these discussions of harm reduction and public health reform, is that drugs as a security issue can actually make it a reform issue in Ukraine. Right, and I think that's something we really need to hammer, and it broadens the audience, and it makes it, I think it brings in new actors. As I say, I've already highlighted what the MOD arguably needs to do. I think there's a lot of work, especially by so many people in this room, underway around that, but I think that is going to be really key as we look to an eventual DDR strategy.
That was John Collins, Director of Academic Engagement at the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime, speaking December 3rd on a panel entitled Harm Reduction in the War in Ukraine that was held at the 6th European Harm Reduction Conference in Warsaw, Poland. Evgenia Kushinova is Executive Director of Convictus Ukraine.
Convictus has over 70 years experience and works in Kyiv and 11 regions in Ukraine. Among the main areas of our work are harm reduction program combating HIV, tuberculosis, hepatitis, providing access or essential services like psychological support for vulnerable groups, supporting victims of violence, and providing humanitarian assistance for victims. Over a year, our work reached more than 51,000 people, making a significant contribution to improving public health and social well-being across Ukraine. The war in Ukraine has created many challenges for harm reduction, prevention, and medical services. Constant shelling, occupied territory, destroyed infrastructure and logistical problems, hamper access to vital services. At the same time, there are growing need for basic services and supplies. Despite the challenges, non-governmental organizations, government organizations, and international donors are working together to respect quickly and flexibly. Convictus Ukraine, we are doing everything we can to ensure that our harm reduction programs continue to work. We are focused on supporting our team and ensuring capacity to work with key population. We provide comprehensive assistance and support, finding the resources we need to continue our work. Ensuring uninterrupted of harm reduction services is one of our topic during the war. We have adapted to challenges such as population displacement, destroyed infrastructure, and security threats. Mobile clinics and outreach teams help us reach people in remote and war-affected areas, bringing essential services directly to communities. In addition to distribution syringes, condoms, lubricants, and HIV testing, we distribute basic necessities such as food, hygiene items, and warm clothing. During the war, the need for these items were extremely high. We regularly worked to mobilize additional support to meet these needs. We also focus on ensuring that people living with HIV can continue to receive antiretrovirus therapy without interruption. This includes supporting those who have been displaced and moved to other regions, working closely with local health facilities and partners, we track and deliver ART, supporting thousands of people. We work to ensure that no one is left behind, even in the most challenging conditions. In the Kyiv region, we provide social support to people who are taking opioid substitution therapy. In addition to basic services, we help clients access critical medical diagnostic and ensuring timely and accurate diagnosis. Psychological support remains a vital part of our work, helping people cope with stress and trauma during these challenging times. That's why we are now developing mental health program and strengthening our collaboration with friendly doctors. We see that comprehensive care is very important at this time. And I would like to share more about our integration center. In Kyiv region, Convictus Ukraine has established an integration service center that provides comprehensive service for people who use drugs and their loved ones. This center is safe and friendly space where people can get harm reduction services, take an HIV test, get registered and receive antiretroviral therapy and comprehensive support. An important point is this, that a person who uses drugs here has a short pathway from HIV testing to IRT and can receive treatment at our center. In addition, we provide assistance in diagnostic and treatment and help to prevention of tuberculosis, hepatitis, psychological support, and humanitarian aids. One of the strongest advantages of this approach is accessibility. People who use drugs do not face bureaucratic barriers or the need to visit several healthcare facilities. Instead, they find a multidisciplinary team ready to provide all the services they need in the one place. Over the past 2 years, we have seen that this model is very effective and provides clients with timely, comprehensive care in a stigma-free location. This approach greatly improves resiliency in treatment. Of course, partnership have been critical in supporting our programs during this challenging time, during wartime. We work closely with medical institutions, government organizations, and NGOs to ensure the harm reduction services, HIV treatment, and support for key populations are available. Resource mobilization is another key aspect of our work. We look for additional opportunities to strengthen our programs. It is also important to work at the state level to ensure that we do not lose the focus on achievements of Ukraine recent years in developing harm reduction program and fighting HIV and TB. We can see a little bit more about our program coverage. The first graph shows how number of people covered in our programs grow from 2022 to 2024, and expected data for 2024 shows that we will maintain this high level, researching over 40,000 people. Second graph shows us the number of new HIV cases and people received antiretroviral therapy in our organization from 2022 to 2024. In 2024, we continue to work and ensure stable program implementation. The third graph shows the number of clients received regular assistance and the comprehensive service center. I would like to pay attention, the center is unique in that it offers safe and discriminatory center, and now we ensure providing people 120 clients for received IRT. This is the average number at the state IRT site in Kyiv region. And I would like to summarize some our conclusions. First, through adaptive approach, we were able to ensure program stability and uninterrupted services in Kyiv and Chernihiv region. Second, effective HIV treatment support has been provided. Our organization with health facilities ensure uninterrupted care for clients. Third, access to opioid substitution therapy was maintain social support for people on OST improves the effectiveness of the program. In addition, comprehensive service center have played an important role in Ukraine. These centers provide comprehensive services in safe, non-discriminatory place. Finally, we have integrated mental health and GBV services into our programs, taking an important step towards comprehensive care. I would like to express my heartfelt gratitude to the international organization who made this work possible, the Global Fund Fight HIV, tuberculosis, malaria, the Center of Diseases Control and Prevention, CDC, the PEPFAR program, USAID, and other international donors and partners organizations who continue to support Ukraine. Also, I would like to thank every person around of the world who cares about Ukrainians. Thank you very much for your attention. We stand strong together. Slava Ukraini!
That was Evgenia Kushenova, Executive Director of Convictus Ukraine, speaking December 3rd on a panel entitled Harm Reduction in the War in Ukraine that was held at the 6th European Harm Reduction Conference in Warsaw, Poland. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Now let's hear from Yanina Stemkovska with Volna, the Ukrainian network of people who use drugs.
Шановні колеги, пане та панове, вітаю, мене звати Яніна Стемковська, і я з України.
Dear colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Yanina Stemkovska, I'm from Ukraine.
Сьогодні я б хотіла вам представити результати та висновки нашого проєкту, який був реалізований міжнародною правозахисною мережею UNMOLD разом з організацією Меридіан, яку я представляю, який стосувався соціально-правової допомоги насильства переміщеним до Росії українським в'язням.
Today I would like to present to you the results and conclusions of our project implemented by International Human Rights Network UNMOD in cooperation with the Meridian Charitable Organization, which was related to the social and legal assistance to Ukrainian prisoners forcibly transferred to Russia.
У листопаді 2022 року ми зіткнулися з жахливою реальністю. Українських громадян, що відбували покарання в місцях позбавлення волі в Херсонській області, було незаконно переміщено до Росії. В Росії, перебуваючи в умовах повної ізоляції, вони не мали змогу лікуватись від захворювань, не мали змоги отримувати будь-яку допомогу чи підтримку. Піддавались стигмі та дискримінації, побоям та знущанням.
In November 22, we faced a terrible reality. Ukrainian citizens serving sentences in prison in Kherson region were illegally transferred to Russia. In Russia, being in conditions of complete isolation, they could not be treated for diseases, could not receive any help or support. They were subjected of stigma and discrimination, beaten and abused.
Після закінчення терміну покарання, коли багато хто з них чекав на звільнення, натомість вони були переміщені в міграційні в'язниці, де їх утримували, могли утримувати без обмеження в часу, очікуючи на депортацію. Але в умовах відсутності дипломатичних відносин між країнами депортація була неможлива.
At the end of their sentences, when many were awaiting release, they were instead placed in immigration detention centers, where they could be held indefinitely pending deportation. But in the absence of diplomatic relations due to the war, deportation is impossible.
В умовах міграційних в'язниць доступ до медичних послуг був відсутній повністю. Це створювало критичну ситуацію для здоров'я тих, хто потребував антиретровірусної терапії, протитуберкульозної терапії та опіоїдної замісної терапії. Ми розуміли, що нам необхідно діяти, і тому ініціювали судові розгляди в Росії, щоб домогтись видворення цих людей з Росії. Таким чином змогли забезпечити їх повернення в Україну через треті країни, Грузію та Молдову.
In the condition of migration prisons, access to medical services was completely absent. This creates a critical health situation for those who needed antiretroviral therapy, opioid replacement therapy, and antituberculosal therapy. We understood that we needed to act, and that is why we initiated legal proceeding to get these people expelled from Russia. In this way, we were able to ensure their return to Ukraine through third countries, Georgia and Moldova.
На жаль, це було доступно тільки для частини колишніх ув'язнених, у які були паспорти з діючим терміном придатності. У більшої кількості бенефіціарів документи були втрачені або навмисно знищені при незаконному переміщенні до Росії. Ці люди досі перебувають там і перебувають в міграційних в'язницях.
Unfortunately, this was only available to some ex-prisoners who had valid passports. In the case of large number of beneficiaries, the documents were lost or specially destroyed during the illegal transfer to Russia. These people are still in immigration prisons.
Навіть після звільнення та покинувши Росію, наші підопічні стикнулися з новими викликами. Після прибуття до третьої країни вони не мали жодного юридичного статусу, як то біженець чи тимчасовий захист. Це означало, що для забезпечення доступу до медичних послуг вони мали очікувати не менше 30 днів, протягом яких було позбавлення необхідного лікування. В результаті ми були змушені нелегально перевозити життєво важливі препарати з України, щоб гарантувати, що люди зможуть отримати хоч якусь необхідну терапію.
Even after the release and leaving Russia, our wards face new challenges. After arriving in the third country, they didn't have any legal status, refugee or temporary protection, none of this. This meant that they had to wait at least 30 days, during which they were deprived of the necessary treatment to ensure access to medical services. As a result, we have been forced to illegally transport vital drugs from drugs treatment from Ukraine to ensure that people can get the treatment they needed.
Незважаючи на всі труднощі, наш проєкт досяг значних результатів. Ми змогли допомогти 432 колишнім українським ув'язненням, з яких 101 людина успішно залишила Росію, 47 з них пізніше повернулися в Україну, 44 особи змогли успішно соціалізуватись у третій країні, отримуючи допомогу та підтримку на новому місці.
Despite all these challenges, our project achieved significant results. We helped to at least 432 former Ukrainian prisoners, of which 101 person successfully left Russia, and 47 of them later returned to Ukraine. 44 people were able to successfully socialize in third countries, receiving help and support in the new place.
Але попереду нас чекають нові виклики. Ми побачили, що проблема доступу до медичної допомоги залишається серйозною та продовжує активізуватись. Відсутність доступу до базової медичної допомоги, в тому числі до опіоїдної замісної терапії, викликає криміналізацію своєї поведінки. Люди частіше порушають законодавство про наркотики та знову потрапляють до в'язниць.
But new challenges await us ahead. We saw that the problem of access to medical care remains serious and continue to be relevant. Lack of access to basic medical care, including opioid substitution therapy, leads to the criminalization of their behavior. People are more likely to violate drug laws and end up in prison again.
Тому дуже важливо продовжувати таку роботу, привертаючи увагу до потреб вимушено переміщених осіб та допомагаючи зміну законодавства, щоб забезпечити їх права та доступ до медичної допомоги. Дякую за вашу увагу. Разом ми зможемо зробити світ кращим.
Therefore, it is still important to continue our work, drawing attention to the needs of forcibly displaced people and pushing for changes in legislation to ensure their rights and access to health care. Thank you for your attention. Together, we can make the world better and fairer for those who find themselves in a difficult situation.
That was Yanina Simkovska with Volna, the Ukrainian network of people who use drugs. Speaking December 3rd on a panel entitled Harm Reduction in the War in Ukraine that was held at the 6th European Harm Reduction Conference in Warsaw, Poland. For now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.